Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 WAMW. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. Well, I'm excited about this week's show. I know I say that almost all the time, but again, this week I mean it. I'm joined by State Senator Eric Bassler, who is our Indiana State Senate District 39 representative. How are you, Senator?
Good. Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And I really appreciate you taking time out of a busy schedule to do this. We've done this a couple times, Senator Bassler, and the reason I like to do it here at the end of the year is that you've got a legislative session coming up. Is that correct?
Yep, we sure do. It starts just after the first of the year.
And do you intend that to be, and I know it varies back and forth, it's long session and short session, but for our listeners, this is not a political show. So explain like when it's long, when it's short.
Sure, yeah. So as we all know, next year's 2019, so in odd numbered years, it's the long session. And then therefore in even numbered years, we have what's called the short session. The long session is just, it's longer because that's the year that we put together the two-year budget. It actually runs through, it can run up until the end of April. If we get done in advance, then we'll finish up sooner, but it'll probably be sometime in late April when we wrap up this coming session.
So to make it easy to remember, election years, you know, they're going to be shorter because we got to get those senators out on the campaign trail, right?
That's right, yes.
And then the non-election years, it's fine. We'll keep them a little bit longer.
Yep, I think that's part of it is, sure.
And I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself when I ask you this because I do want to, I'm going to back up after I ask you this, but you are interested, if I'm not misstating this, you're interested in perhaps shortening the session.
That's one of the bills that I have that I'm going to be putting forward this session that would actually shorten both the long and the short session, and it would shorten them by 1 month, by about 30 days.
And why?
I think that if we aren't careful, government has a tendency just to get bigger and bigger and take up more and more time.
They think they're pretty important up there, don't they?
Well, they can sometimes. You bet. You're right about that. And in Indiana, we refer to it as a citizens legislature, and these are supposed to be kind of normal, everyday citizens that have real jobs and real careers and professions and families to go back to. And over the years, the sessions have just gotten longer. I don't know the specific details, but I do know within my lifetime that it used to be there wasn't even a short session. And then it got so there was the short session was maybe just a few days, and the only purpose of it was to do technical corrections from the previous session. So, for example, when you write a bill, maybe you should have put a comment and you didn't, or vice versa. So it would just be simple technical corrections in that that short session, and now we're up to the point where the short session runs from early. Yeah, it's a session. It goes from
right.
Early January to the middle of March, and so what this bill would do is it would end the short session at the middle of February, and it would end the long session at the end of March instead of the end of April, and I'm fairly confident that when you give people a deadline, they tend to meet it.
Right.
Don't always meet it, but they tend to.
Didn't last year, though.
No, we didn't. You're right. Like that's why I do a little clarifying there. You don't always meet it, but we tend to.
But do you think that's, and I'm trying to be charitable when I say this, do you think that's because you didn't have enough time, or just because there's some wasted time at the beginning, and then they try to cram it all in, and some of that stuff just doesn't get done?
Yeah, that's
the latter, not the former.
Well, I mean, what took place, you're right. At the beginning of every session, it's just kind of slow to get things moving. And I think to a certain extent, people think, we got till the end of April, so you don't need to really work hard the first few weeks or so. But last year, the bottom line there is that we just didn't manage the clock, didn't manage the calendar well there in the last, like, say, 2 weeks.
So the Patriots lost on the last second, and they said that Belichick didn't manage his time very well, and I think that was pretty obvious, and that's what it seemed like at the end of the session.
Yeah, good analogy.
I want to get right into your history and then the Senate district boundaries. Some people aren't sure, like, who
sure.
represent them, if you're in Washington, D.C., if you're
right.
in, where are you, and
yeah,
tell
bet.
Us a little bit about yourself. And I don't want to spend a lot of time because a lot of people know, but go ahead.
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, it's Senate District 39. And Senate District 39 from the north is roughly the bottom two-thirds of Clay and Owen counties. It's all of Sullivan, all of Greene, and then the northern part of Knox County, and then all of Davies and all of Martin County. So it makes up parts of seven counties. And as far as
it's a big district,
it is. Yeah, it is. It's a pretty good sized geographic area.
Now, is that the largest geographical Senate district? Is one of the biggest?
If it's not the biggest, it's probably one of the top two or three.
Okay.
And that's just due to the fact that it tends to be kind of a rural area, small communities, small towns.
And Washington would be the biggest town
in the
district. Is that correct?
By far. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I know you used to be on city council in Washington, and then you jumped up. When was that? Kind of take me through this correct. Brief timeline.
Yeah, I was on the city council for 3 years prior to joining the Indiana Senate. I was just reelected, so I guess I'm officially beginning my second term as a senator. Each Senate term is 4 years, and so we had an election in November, as everybody knows, and I was reelected then. Having said that,
you were not opposed. Is that correct?
Yeah, okay. Having said that, it was a pretty easy election as I ran unopposed. I was jokingly telling my wife, Julie, that as long as I vote for myself, then I get a win.
So. That's funny. So you're starting your second four-year term. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And you are on some pretty serious committees this time. I read that. But tell us kind of where you started with committees and what you're doing now.
Sure, I'd be glad to. The last session, I was on the Environmental Affairs Committee. I was on Education, and I was also on Appropriations. And now this coming session, I've got what I think is, a pretty significant role as vice, well, we call it ranking member, but to kind of use layman's term, it would be like a vice chairman of the Appropriations Committee. And as your listeners may know, the Appropriations Committee is the one that really oversees the budget process. So that's a significant committee, and it's awfully good to be on the vice chair of that committee. And then also I'm the chair of the K-12 Funding Committee. So that's the group that ultimately comes up with.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit later because there could be some controversy this session. I'm going to ask you about that, but keep going.
Yep, we can sure talk about that in more depth. But I'm the chair of that committee, the one that handles the K-12 funding. And then finally, I'm the chair of the Insurance and Financial Institutions Committee. So that's a new assignment to me. In fact, I have not even been on that committee in the past, so it's an entirely new assignment, and I'll get a chair of that committee.
Okay, so two committees and then one subcommittee.
Correct.
Underneath Education.
Actually, the K-12 funding subcommittee is underneath Appropriations Committee.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit about that. I briefly mentioned it, but there's some scuttlebutt that there will be walkouts organized by the teachers union and relative to teacher pay. Can you spend a little bit of time talking about that and letting us know what you think is going
to
happen there?
Sure, I'd be happy to. One thing to kind of keep in mind is when we look at education funding for the state, the state of Indiana spends about 51 or 52% of its entire budget on K-12 funding. And then roughly another...
Of the entire state budget, is that right?
Yeah, correct. Yep, that's right, on K-12. And then about another 13% goes on post-secondary. So almost 65% of the budget goes toward education. And so I guess the bottom line is there, we're putting a lot of money towards education already. When you factor in the local, state, and federal funding, on average, we're spending about $11,000 per child per year. So there are significant dollars to go towards education, and we want to continue to do that because it's very important for the future of Indiana. So what we're going to do this year is we're going to try to come up with as much additional funding as possible. One thing that becomes challenging, though, I know there's a lot of discussion about teachers and teacher salaries and so forth. One thing that becomes challenging is the fact that we really don't control how much teachers make. Ultimately, usually is a negotiated agreement between the local school corporation and the teachers union. So in some ways, I would encourage people, if they think there should be additional funding or additional teacher salary, I should say, to try to work through that process.
So you're saying deal with this perhaps locally instead of, but to be fair, you guys are the one that... kick in a big portion of that $11,000 per student. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, we do. I mean, roughly it would be, probably 6,500 to 7,000 per student comes from the state. So I guess it kind of goes back to the, I think we have to be careful, because some people want to have the state legislature start dictating teacher salaries. And boy, I'm very uncomfortable with that.
And why?
I'd much rather that decision process be made at the local level. I don't mean to be too unkind about this, the legislative process, but, you know, the typical legislator doesn't know the teachers in all the different towns and communities and counties throughout the state, obviously. And so who are they to be setting the salaries?
So you're saying,
that's
too,
more
that
of a local issue to me, to have the local school boards, local superintendents and principals negotiate with the union to figure out how much teacher salary should be.
Yeah, and Lafayette schools could be different than Orange County, could be different than Fort Wayne, could be different than Vincennes.
Yeah, to have that dictated by the state is just, that's just too much overreach from my perspective. But having said that, we're looking at possible ways to figure out, okay, with the additional dollars we put forward to K-12 education, how can we, I guess, have some type of an impact or an influence and encourage the local school corporations to pass as much of that as they possibly can along the teacher salaries.
Okay. Well, I enjoy hearing you say that. I'm sure there are those that want to hear that. Is it going to be enough to avoid some of this stuff, that some of this wild kind of protests and whatnot that's going to happen up at the State House?
I don't know. I mean, I don't doubt that there's going to maybe be some activities at the State House and protests or what have you. But my sense is, at least when I talk with teachers, they're a dedicated profession, and you know, they care about the kids, and they understand that they've got a huge obligation. And I can't imagine them doing some type of a strike or a walkout, but they might. But if they do, we'll kind of work through that issue also. But you know, the bottom line is, we're going to try and get as much funding as we can out to the local school corporations, and then ultimately they're the ones that decide how much the teachers make.
Very good. I really want to get into legislative priorities of the caucus, of the governor, of the State House in general, and then also yours. Obviously, education is constantly a focus. There's been a lot of talk. You've gotten a lot of publicity about this time zone thing, and we need to spend at least a little bit of, you know, no pun intended, but we need to spend a little time.
Probably should take some time to do that, shouldn't we?
To talk about it. So maybe start from the top, like, mm-hmm. What are the priorities of the caucus, the Republican caucus?
Yeah.
And then what are going to be the governor's priorities, and what do you think is important?
Sure. Obviously the number one thing we need to get done this coming session is to pass a balanced budget. And that's one thing that Indiana has a pretty darn good tradition of doing. Probably over the last 10, 15 years, we've had balanced budgets. So you can count on, we'll do that again this year. And then where it becomes challenging is how do you then balance that budget? So if there is additional dollars, and there will be, we anticipate some additional dollars to spend, where are those additional dollars then spent? One of the biggest challenges the state faces from a government perspective is the Department of Child Services. We've got a lot of problems there. It's no secret. It's obvious that we do.
Are there just problems? Is it underfunded? I mean, what do you suggest? Obviously, the Republicans and the Democrats kind of see it a little bit differently.
Sure, yeah. I mean, part of it's a management issue, but part of it is a funding issue. So I would anticipate significant additional funds going to that agency. And one of the reasons I think it has been underfunded is it's hard to prepare. It was hard to prepare for what the impact that the drug problem that Indiana is facing, what impact that has had on families, children's communities. And therefore, there's been a lot greater demand for DCS because, again, you know, we have situations where children need to be taken care of because their families are in difficult situations. And the funding hasn't been there. So we appropriated some additional funding outside the budget process earlier this calendar year to
just
help
to say, hey, this
that.
Is important to us. We need to make sure we're doing a good job by way of DCS.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then so that's probably going to get a pretty good increase, maybe to the tune of maybe $200 to $300 million additional funding.
Wow.
Which that's a lot of money.
And what percentage of, I mean, what's your typical annual budget?
The total budget is right about $15 billion. So, and again, you start breaking that down, and that's one of the challenges. There's always going to be kind of a maybe a tug of war. You know, do we do more towards DCS, or do we do more towards K-12 or universities or public safety, or the problems we're having with drugs in the state? There's always this kind of this push and pull between the different needs. And we do have limited resources because, I mean, as you well know, Grant, the only resources the government has is what they take from the citizens. And you know, depending upon what the economy does, that can change on any given year.
Good answer. Good thoughts. Let's get into some of your priorities, some of your specific legislation that you're going to be offering. Obviously, the time zone thing, which is very interesting to lots of people. There's a school bus safety measure. There's a number of different measures. You know, we've got about 5 more minutes here. I'd like you to kind of talk about what you're going to focus on.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because sometimes a lot of the bills we deal with is just the kind of the more mundane task of a state government. But I will say, and I kind of say it with a chuckle, as you can tell, that for some reason this year I have 3 bills that somehow have gotten a fair amount of, I guess, attention or media play, if you will. One of them does have to do with time zone. The other one has to do with school bus safety. And then the third one, as you'd mentioned earlier, has to do with making the legislative session shorter. Let me make one other comment about that last one first, and then we can talk about the other two. If we were to shorten up the legislative session by a month each year, it would probably save the taxpayers, we haven't worked out the exact numbers, but probably somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million a year, which that's pretty serious amount of cash that could be going somewhere else if we were to shorten a session. So that's one that's gotten some kind of interest from newspapers and radio and TV.
And what kind, just relative to that, what do they call you and say, or how do they approach it?
I think they're kind of surprised that I want to do that, or maybe the population is. But again, I see it as a government efficiency thing. And if we can be more efficient, more effective, and save some taxpayers' money, man, why wouldn't we do that?
Right. So,
and then the other two, again, the school bus bill and the time zone. I guess maybe we'll talk about the school bus bill just for a second. This will be the third time that I filed this bill. One time it didn't even get a hearing in the committee. The next time it passed out of committee, it passed out of the Senate, but it did not get through the House. So you know, maybe third time to charm, it'll get through this time. And what it has to do with, to kind of keep it brief, is it would make the it make it easier to enforce violations of school bus stop arms, and in addition, it would make it a more serious offense. So, for example, right now, and it gets really complicated, but sometimes a school bus stop arm violation can be only an infraction. And so, when you think about an infraction, you know, think about a speeding ticket, for example. From my perspective, When there's a school bus and that school bus is stopped and the arm is out, then we know that there are either children outside that bus right then, or there are going to be children outside that bus. And so to me, violating that stop arm is much more significant than going, you know, 65 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone. And so that's why we would want to make it so any violation would be not just an infraction, but actually a misdemeanor.
You told me at some point, I don't remember, but how many of these violations actually occur?
Yeah,
is this common? Or?
Well, it's amazingly common. The Indiana Department of Education each year asks all of its school corporations to have all of its school bus drivers to keep track of, on that one day, how many violations took place. And the last data we have is from back in April. And so then when you assume that's an average day, and then you multiply that by 180 days of school year, it turns out to be, roughly about 500,000 stop arm violations a year. Now, that's a huge number. But let's say that for some reason...
500,000.
Yes, it's really kind of unbelievable. But let's say that day was unusual. It wasn't an average day.
People knew, and they're like, we're really going to blow this number up. Sure.
So let's say it was only 250,000. That's still a big number.
That's a lot.
Or let's reduce that 500 by 80% and take it down to 100,000. That's still a lot of stop arm violations.
Correct. It's a big issue, and this, the goal of this legislation is to change that.
Yeah, it really would. And to a certain extent, you hate to think that a tragedy leads... Sometimes a tragedy has to happen to make good things, it's a shame that sometimes it takes a tragedy for good things to happen. But we probably remember several weeks ago where there was children up in Northern Indiana that were killed when they were getting on a school bus because someone violated the stop arm. So Obviously, that's gotten on this bill on the radar screen more than it had previously. So hopefully it's something we'll be able to address this year and be successful in getting it passed through the House and the Senate and onto the governor.
Well, we don't have a ton of time left, but I really want to talk about this time zone thing. I mean, this is, if you asked anybody that's paying attention, it's like as important as national security well, and everything else.
That has kind of surprised me. I mean, I've had people like newspapers, radio, and TV call and talk with me literally from all over the state. Fort Wayne, South Bend, Louisville,
Indianapolis, the state, right?
Yeah, and outside the state also, yeah, Evansville. And simply what this bill would do is it would move Indiana to the central time zone. And first of all, I based that just kind of on kind of a rational thought process. And if you go outside really any time of year, roughly speaking, if you're in the right time zone, roughly speaking, the sun should be overhead about 12 noon. Because of variations, anywhere from 11 to 1 would be reasonable. But most of the year in Indiana, it's anywhere from about 1:35 to almost 2 o'clock.
That is directly overhead.
Yeah, that the sun is directly overhead. Should be noon.
You told me this too one time. What's the normal dividing line between... So just on a natural law concept, what's the normal dividing line between, say, Eastern and Central? Where is that geographically?
Yep. If you were to do, just like you say, kind of the natural law view of this, it would be in Ohio, near Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
And so in some ways, it would make sense that it would be on the Indiana-Ohio border. I mean, I get why it wouldn't run right through the middle of the state. At one time, the border was Pennsylvania and Ohio.
How long ago was that?
Boy, I can't remember what year that was, but that was quite a while back.
Okay. And then it probably moved over to the other side of Ohio.
Yep, then it moved over to Ohio, and then in Indiana, it's varied over the last, let's say, 100 years or so.
Yeah, this is a hot topic. I'm sure when you introduced this bill, you knew this was going to be a hot topic, Eric.
Well, I knew it would generate some interest, but it generated more than I anticipated. And so ultimately, so from a rational perspective, I think it makes sense. But then when you start looking at the impact on health, there's all sorts of studies that have been done that indicate that if Indiana were in central time instead of eastern time, there would be lower incidence of obesity, lower incidence of people being overweight. There would be it'd have a positive impact when it comes to cardiac and heart issues, when it comes to certain types of cancer.
Why wouldn't we just put the whole United States on Eastern if that's the case?
Well, it has to do with when the sun sets. And in Indiana, it sunsets.
And your natural sleep time is
there. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it sets pretty late, therefore people get less sleep. Therefore, you start having health issues and health problems because of the lack of sleep.
That's interesting stuff. It's amazing that would have that type of impact.
Yeah, it really is. But there's a lot of studies that show that. And the final point, it goes back to a certain extent, school safety. It's dark in the mornings and these kids are being picked up to school buses. Also, kids don't get as much sleep as they normally would if they were in central time. Therefore, they aren't as sharp at school, but they'd be able to learn the next day. So there's several things, but we're kind of running short on time. But happy to talk about it in another program.
Well,
or some more.
Maybe give us a wrap, 20 seconds. What are we to look for in this upcoming session? It's your second full term.
Yeah.
And are you looking forward to it? Does it go too long? Well, obviously it goes too long. You're off on legislation. But what are we to take from what's to come here?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, I look forward to it, but I also have to admit that I sort of dread the thought of the session coming up because that means I'm going to be away from Julie and the kids a lot more. But again, the bottom line is we're going to pass a balanced budget. We're going to really do some significant additional funding for Department of Child Services. We're going to try and get as many dollars as possible to K-12 education. And then there's the whole area of the drug problems that Indiana faces, and for that matter, the whole nation. We've still got a lot of work to do there, and that can be an entire 20-minute discussion in and of itself. So those are kind of some of the key things that we're going to be dealing with this session.
Did a great job today, Senator. I really appreciate you coming on. That's State Senator Eric Bassler. Thank you, Eric.
Happy to be here. Thanks so much.
Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9 and 101.3 FM, 1580 a.m. You can also listen to or download a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every weekend to WAMW as we focus on the community.